Hi, for what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. South Korea's new president, Moon Jae-in, was sworn in Wednesday, saying he's prepared to travel to Pyongyang if necessary to ease tensions with North Korea over its nuclear missile program. Following his landslide election victory Tuesday, Mr. Moon told supporters he'll be the president of everyone, including those who didn't support him. Mr. Moon won the lion's share of the youth vote in South Korea. Turnout exceeded 80%. Nursing student Min Soo Kim reacted in Los Angeles.
I was really happy because I figured out that he is being a president today at 10 o'clock. And I had a class that time, so I just like, yay, everyone, see, he got it. Yeah, so we are so happy. Like, my age friends are really happy right now.
Mr. Moon, the son of North Korean refugees, has advocated a two-track policy on the North Korean issue, promoting dialogue, maintaining pressure, and sanctions. Will this clash with U.S. policy? Bruce Bennett is an analyst with the RAND Corporation.
It depends. President Trump has been talking on and off about negotiating with North Korea. It's not entirely clear that it is contrary to U.S. policy. It's certainly different from what many Americans have been expecting in terms of a hardline policy of possible military strikes.
The White House said it looks forward to working with Mr. Moon, although the future of the deployment of a U.S. anti-missile system known as THAAD now appears less certain. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has sacked his army chief, Paul Malong, replacing him with General James Ojongo, who's an ethnic minority Luo. Civil war has plagued the country since late 2013, when Mr. Kiir Odinga fired his vice president, Riek Machar, a newer. Several senior army officers resigned in February, accusing Malong of conducting an ethnic war. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump has authorized the arming of the YPG Kurds in Syria, fighting alongside Arab militia against Islamic State. They'll make up the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces driving toward the IS-held city of Raqqa. The move places the U.S. at odds with NATO ally Turkey, who considers the YPG a terrorist group. Sean Spicer is a White House spokesman.
The SDF, partnered with enabling support from U.S. and coalition forces, are the only force on the ground that successfully seize Raqqa in the near future. We're keenly aware of the security concerns of our coalition partners in Turkey. We want to reassure the people and the government of Turkey that the U.S. is committed to preventing additional security risks and protecting our NATO ally.
Speaking Tuesday in Denmark, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, who spoke with his Turkish counterpart, said his intent is to work with the Turks to take Raqqa down. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is to visit the White House next week. The European Union Tuesday called on the U.S. to keep funding U.N. agencies as the Trump administration ponders caps or cuts in U.N. contributions. The U.S. is the U.N.'s top contributor. Federica Mogherini, the EU's foreign policy chief, addressed the Security Council.
It is essential for us that we all keep investing in these U.N. agencies. They are as important to global peace and security as defense spending, and sometimes even more.
Meanwhile, the U.S. called on the EU to toughen its sanctions enforcement against Syria and North Korea and do more to convince Iran to end its destabilizing efforts. At least four U.N. peacekeepers in Central African Republic were killed Tuesday when their convoy was attacked by Christian anti-Balaka militants in the southeast. Several were wounded, one is missing. According to the U.N., eight militants were killed. President Trump late Tuesday fired James Comey, director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, saying he is no longer able to effectively lead the law enforcement agency. The president acted on advice of his attorney general and his deputy. Senator Chuck Schumer leads the Democratic minority in the Senate.
I told the president, Mr. President, with all due respect, you are making a big mistake.
Mr. Trump's decision followed FBI admission that Comey overstated a key finding in the investigation of Democrat and former Secretary of State and presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's email during his congressional testimony last week. A tunnel at a facility in Washington State that stores radioactive plutonium partly collapsed Tuesday, forcing the evacuation of thousands of workers. Federal officials said there was no sign anyone was exposed to radiation. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said the U.S. economy will not be able to achieve a 3% growth target this year. He told Reuters Congress, which must approve President Trump's tax, trade, regulatory, and energy policies, is slow-walking everything. Meanwhile, the NASDAQ composite, a barometer of the U.S. tech industry, closed Tuesday at a record high 6,120 points. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC President Joseph Kabila has named his long-awaited transitional government.
Today, we say this government is inclusive according to the agreement of 31 December because all conditions are represented.
Andre Alain Atonde is the spokesman for President Kabila's ruling coalition. A moderate opposition leader says the new government may be a little too late for elections this year. South African President Jacob Zuma launches a new state-of-the-art public transport amid political tensions. And South Sudan President sacks his army chief, but the rebels says it will be business as usual.
We, the SPLA, we know very well that Paul Bannon is being sacked from the SPLA in government, but he will be taken to control the National Security Service. So there's not going to be difference in it. We are just going to expect more fighting.
Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for the SPLAIO. We'll hear from President Salva Kiir's spokesman, and a recent report says piracy attacks off the coast of West Africa have nearly doubled from 2015 to 2016. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila has named his long-awaited transitional government as called for in the December 31, 2016 agreement. However, a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement says the new government is illegitimate and the Rassemblement does not recognize it because it does not satisfy the accord. But Andre Alain Atunde, spokesman for President Kabila's ruling coalition, says the new government is in line with the December 31st agreement because all coalitions, including the Rassemblement, are represented.
This is according to the accord of the 31 December and according to our constitution. Why I say so? Because the president talked first with people from Rassemblement. The Rassemblement is the coalition of parties from UDPS, G7, and all the parties. They gave him four or five names of candidates, and he chose one of them, who is Mr. Tshibala. And now Mr. Tshibala is forming his government with, I think, 57 people. And we hope that this is the road to the elections and the road to complete the accord of 31 December.
You said the government is in line with the December 31st agreement. Martin Fayulu of the Rassemblement says that the government the president named is illegitimate because it does not respect the December 31st agreement.
You know, Rassemblement is one coalition. But unfortunately now, this coalition is split. People from coalition Rassemblement, from Tshisekedi Rassemblement, from Olenga Koyi Rassemblement, but the president concerted all of them, the Rassemblement, except Tshisekedi Rassemblement, which didn't lie to Colonel Biscay with the president. But formally, the Rassemblement is there. And when they decide to join the government, it will be possible. But today we say this government is inclusive according to the agreement of 31 December because all conditions are represented.
What do you say to those who say that the appointment of this new government is too late? This is May, the fifth month of the year. The agreement was signed December 31st. Some people say this is an attempt by President Kabila to stay in power.
You know, the problem was the coalition of opposition, Rassemblement and Alliance. The majority signed, but MLC signed one day later, and the other party according to their will. And as you know, the issue of forming a new government is very crucial to any country. That's why it takes so long time. That thanks to God, now this problem is behind. and we are engaged. We take commitment to grow state relations and to create the conditions of going there.
Andre Alain Atunde is a spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa. Under the December 31, 2016 agreement, the new government appointed Tuesday by President Joseph Kabila is supposed to prepare the country for elections at the end of this year. But a moderate opposition leader says the delay in naming the transitional government raises doubt whether the election can take place at the end of this year. Freddy Matungulu of the opposition Congo Nabiso Party would not say whether the new government is in line with the December accord, but he says it's time for a government in the DRC that will organize elections for Congolese to choose their own leaders.
As you know, we have this situation. The country was supposed to have had the presidential election in December. This didn't happen, and I think the main mandate of this cabinet is to organize the presidential election. And under the agreement of December 31st, 2016, the election is supposed to take place before the end of the year. But the government has been appointed with a long delay, and we are now well into the fifth month of the year. So there are serious doubts as to whether or not the country will be able to go to the election before the end of the year.
Do you think the appointment of this government is in line with the December 31st agreement?
I think we've gotten to the point where what's important for this country is to organize so that the people can have the opportunity to vote and put in place new people to govern this big nation. As you know, President Kabila's term came to an end, the second and last one under the Constitution in December. And I think what's really important is for the country to organize the election so that people can vote and essentially achieve the change in government, in governance, in management. I think that's important to put it on a course of progress when it comes to improving the living standards in the country.
The appointment of this new government is coming in the fifth month of the year, and the agreement was signed December 31st. Do you think there is enough time for the election that you are talking about?
That's what I'm saying. I think it's becoming more of a challenge now, and there are serious doubts as to whether or not the election could be organized before the end of the year. In particular, because, as you know, the country is also facing a number of major economic and security challenges. The government has got to get the situation under control while they're preparing to put the country or the electoral process back on track so that you can have this election. I think it seems to be quite a daunting, very challenging situation. So we don't know exactly how this is going to work out.
So don't you think this is a deliberate attempt by President Kabila to continue in power?
Personally, you know, I tend to be very pragmatic, taking the attitude to judge by the performance of the team that is in place. And this one has just been appointed today, so we don't know exactly how it's going to work out. But, you know, if you look at the lineup, you have essentially most of the people who've been there in the last couple of years. And there are some doubts as to whether or not this team will be able to be up to the challenge. But my tendency is always to judge people by their performance. And for that reason, you know, I would not get into speculations.
Freddy Matungulu is leader of the opposition Congo Nabiso Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today is Wednesday, May 10th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. In South Africa, President Jacob Zuma on Tuesday launched the country's new state-of-the-art metro rail, dubbed the People's Trains. The event was seen as an opportunity for Zuma to shore up popular support amid mounting political tensions and an upcoming no-confidence vote in parliament. Tuso Kumalo has the story from Pretoria.
South Africa rolled out the first phase of a $4 billion 20-year project to modernize public transport. Commuters have in the past resorted to burning trains in anger at the aging current fleet of trains for arriving late and constantly breaking down. President Jacob Zuma unveiled the new trains outfitted with air conditioning, CCTV cameras, and other features in Pretoria. He pleaded with people not to burn or vandalize them.
This is the government who's trying to better our lives in any way. Bit by bit, we will do it right at the end. So we are getting there as a country. These are signs, clear and positive signs that says to us, South Africa is not sinking, is rising.
The organizers of the launch and Zuma himself may be breathing a sigh of relief the event went without a major incident. The country has seen several anti-Zuma protests since a controversial cabinet reorganization in March. Earlier this month, members of the country's largest labor union booed Zuma when he arrived to address them during May Day festivities, and he left without delivering his speech. But at the event Tuesday, supporters cheered the president. Though, once the launch was over, Takalani Matsilele, an activist, entered one of the new trains, urging people to sign a petition to remove Zuma.
Our country is going down the drain. As long as Zuma is the president, that man, he have led us to a junk status for the first time.
A vote of no confidence against Zuma is pending in parliament. The Constitutional Court is to hear arguments Monday on an opposition petition to make the parliamentary vote a secret ballot. Zuma has survived several previous no-confidence votes. If the secret ballot is granted, some of his own MPs who have openly expressed displeasure at his leadership could team up with the opposition to remove him. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Pretoria.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir late Tuesday sacked his Army Chief of Staff, Paul Malong, and replaced him with General James Ajongo from another tribe. This comes after some generals have resigned because of alleged tribalism in the army. President Kiir and Malong are from the Dinka tribe, while Ajongo is a Luo. Presidential spokesman Atain Wek Atain says the sacking of Malong is the prerogative of the president and has nothing to do with tribalism within the army or with the direction of the current conflict in the country.
Well, the reason is normal. The job of chief of general staff is a job that ranges between 2 years and 4 years and always lies in the prerogative of the president, who is the commander-in-chief of the army. He can decide to let you go on or shorten your time between those years I just mentioned. So the change is just a routine, not more than that.
Do you think it has something to do with the current uptake in fighting? Is it a sign that perhaps the SPLA army is losing or is not doing well?
No. The opposite is true. In the most cases that the SPLA came under attack from the pocket of rebels, the SPLA has been doing well. It has been repulsing the rebels and even pursue them, you know, beyond the line of defense. The SPLA is doing well. As I told you, the position of chief of general staff is a position that is given for 2 years or 4 years, the maximum. General Paul Malong has been in that position since 16 of April 2014, which is 3 years and 1 month, exactly. And so if the commander-in-chief of the army, who is the president, so desired to change guard and give the position to another capable military commander in the name of former deputy chief of general staff for administration and finance, that is General James Ajongo Mawut, to lead the army, then it is okay, because it is the same army generals.
President Salva Kiir has been criticized by the SPLA-IO, the opposition or the rebels, of forming an army that is mainly made up of his Dinka tribe. What do you think the sacking of Malong and the appointment of James Ajongo, does that address that criticism?
No. That's completely nonsense. Given that the army is not Dinka army, the army is the army of South Sudan. Mr. Jonga is not a Dinka. He's a Luo from Barrel Ghazal and mainly from Awil. And there are a number of other generals who are not Dinka. And the army is not Dinka army. And therefore, whoever says it is Dinka army is actually wrong.
So there is no split between President Kiir and Malong?
No, at all. No, there's no split at all. This is a normal process, and it is within the system.
No, some people say that the appointment of Ajongo will be a continuation of the fight. Are we closer to any ceasefire in South Sudan?
We are closer to ceasefire, and the fighting has not been on. It is that the SPLA has been fighting in self-defense, and it will continue to defend it as the self-defense is not restricted.
Atain Wekatens, a spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. A spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, SPLAIO, says the rebels, led by former First Vice President Riek Machar, are not surprised by the sacking of Army Chief of Staff Paul Malong. SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel says Paul Malong's dismissal and his replacement, General James Ajongo, will make no difference in the ongoing conflict because Ajongo will still control the government militias. In fact, Gabriel says the rebels expect more war under Ajongo.
We are not surprised. The SPLAIO is not surprised by the replacement of the Army Chief of Staff. We had long expected that it would really happen because the Chief of Staff spoiled the SPLA completely by bringing in the Matianganyor and bringing in also the militias. That has reduced the standard of the SPLA in government. But at the same time, it has strengthened the army because right now the professional SPLA is not really there in the government. What we have in the government right now is the militias and the Matianganyor of the General Chief of Staff, that is Paul Malonga one. All these things that have been happening is being done by the Matianganyor. So we expect that to happen, but we are not surprised for it.
President Salva Kiir and Malong are from the same Dinka tribe, and so the president has appointed Ajongo. He is from a different tribe. Can we give the president credit to say that he is trying to diversify the army?
Ajongo is a Dinka from the Bargaza region. He's from Western Bargaza, but that is still Jurchol. Jurchol is still a Dinka. But the problem is that the ancestors are still the same. So there is no difference between Ajongo and Paul Malonga one. Well, that one is from Awil, that is Northern Bargaza, then one is from Western Bargaza. That is the difference. But all in all, these are the same people. So there is no going to be difference. Ajongo is going to control what Malong left. That is the Matianganyor. He will be controlling them. He will be controlling the militias. See, there's not going to be differences. We're still expecting war from Ajongo because these two people, they are the same people. One way or the other, they are the same from the same region.
Do you think the sacking of Malong has anything to do with the current fighting, which I think has intensified? Do you think it has something to do with that?
Paul Malong, after his polling the SPLA in government, he decided that he wants to join the National Security Service. Because right now, the strong force that is in South Sudan right now is the National Security Service. So I know very well that, okay, we, the SPLAIO, we know very well that Paul Malong is being sacked from the SPLA in government. But he will be taken to control the National Security Service. So there's not going to be difference in it. We are just going to expect more fighting instead of peace, we are going to expect fighting in that. So that's what Paul Malong wants. He will go and start causing more atrocities right now than even when he was the Chief of Staff.
There has been an uptick in the fighting recently. Where are things? Are we closer to any kind of ceasefire?
No, I don't think we're really closer to ceasefire because the government doesn't like ceasefire. The government wants to make sure that, okay, they eliminate IO completely. They even tried to reach Pagak, the headquarters of IO. But we have been very strong. We made sure that, okay, we push them back. So ceasefire is a dream in South Sudan right now. Because even if Malong is being sacked, we know very well that, okay, the aim of JCE is still the same. They will make sure that, okay, they continue the offensive towards IO area, and we'll be waiting for them to die.
Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the Deputy Military Spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan-South Sudan border. Piracy attacks off the coast of West Africa nearly doubled from 2015 to 2016, according to a recent report released by Oceans Beyond Piracy. The group's West Africa project director, Greg Clow, talked to Ricky Stryak about the people behind the attacks and their motivations.
So it's difficult to say who are behind the attacks specifically. Many of the attacks have been connected to militant and criminal groups in the Niger Delta. But piracy is considered a transnational crime, and so it's also connected to transnational crime networks internationally.
Can you go into that a little bit more? What does that mean transnationally? Are they African groups or?
The groups themselves committing piracy acts are primarily based in Africa, but some of the funding and some of the activities in the region are also connected to other larger groups that they're funded by.
Do you have an example of any of these larger groups?
We don't really look into those larger transnational groups. Our information indicates that the attacks are primarily perpetrated by militant groups within the Niger Delta, but we've heard anecdotally that they're possibly connected to broader transnational organized crime groups.
What kind of ships are being attacked off of the West African coast? Are they foreign vessels? Are they state-owned?
So I would say all of the above, but I would say within our report, the information that we have is primarily based on attacks on foreign-owned vessels. Because attacks on foreign-owned vessels are the ones that are primarily reported to the international reporting centers. And estimates by the International Maritime Bureau say that up to 70% of attacks in West Africa are unreported.
What are the reasons you guys think that these attacks have nearly doubled in the Gulf of Guinea over the last year?
There's many possible reasons for the increase, but some of the increase we've attributed to the changing dynamics in the Niger Delta. The election of Buhari and some of the changing military groups in the area have shown that the pirates have become adaptable and they've seen opportunities within 2016 to commit acts of piracy. So that was the reason that we saw the increase.
With the Niger Delta militants being perpetrators, are they giving reasons for doing this? Are they saying the oil is stolen from their land?
We have heard that grievance being used as a reason for kidnappings in the past, and I don't think you can completely disconnect the kidnappings and attacks on land to the kidnappings and attacks that are happening at sea. From our research, it indicates that these groups are connected and sometimes are the same groups.
Is there a big difference between the attacks happening off the coast of Nigeria and the other third of attacks that happen in West Africa, in the Gulf of Guinea?
Yeah, there is a difference. I mean, the attacks that are happening in and around Nigeria and in the bordering countries are happening farther out at sea. They're oftentimes violent and they're using weapons.
That was Greg Klaug, Oceans Beyond Piracy Group's West Africa Project Director. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Colorado in the Western United States. Multidrug-resistant tuberculosis is on the rise in several high-burden countries. Researchers at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, found the primary driver is not the TB bacteria becoming more drug-resistant, but person-to-person transmission, VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Within the next 25 years, investigators with the CDC predict the proportion of tuberculosis cases that don't respond to one or more antibiotics will increase significantly in Russia, India, South Africa, and the Philippines. Russia leads the pack, say researchers, whose mathematical model predicts that one-third of all TB cases in that country will be multi-drug or extensively drug-resistant by 2040. India is the next, with more than 12.4% of the cases expected to be resistant to treatment, followed by almost 9% in the Philippines and 5.7% cases in South Africa. Nearly 40% of drug-resistant cases worldwide occur in those four high-burden countries, according to the CDC investigators. These four nations accounted for more than 230,000 new cases of difficult-to-treat tuberculosis in 2015.
That was VOA's Jessica Berman reporting. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer David Vandy, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.